4CRB now presents The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group. With a large team of highly experienced professionals, you can feel safe knowing that Bell Legal can help you with your legal needs.
And it's a very good morning to you. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You. As always, your opportunity to get that free legal advice. All we need you to do is get on the telephone, and our number is 55-208-88. That's 55-208-88. 07 in front of that number if you're south of the Tweed River, or you can use our email address, which is talkback@4crb.com. And someone who's been waiting very patiently on the phone, Margarita. Good morning, Margarita. How are you today?
Good morning, John. Good. Just have a simple question for you. I have a notice of order made in the Magistrates Court of Victoria at Ringwood at the 30th day of June 2014. Mm-hmm. My question is, can I still retrieve that money that the judge awarded me?
Right. So what was the date of the order again?
30th day of June 2014.
2014. Okay. Look, Margarita, I think you can, because I don't think the statute of limitations applies to that order. But what I would like to do, if you don't mind, I'll double check on that and I'll make a comment on it next week, if that would be okay for you.
Yeah, that would be great, because my solicitor back in Melbourne, when I used to live there, he said, hang on to it, because he won't have any money now because he had to go to prison. Just hang on to it, and then maybe you get like monthly furnished wages or something.
Garnishee.
Later on.
Yes. Well, look, normally the statute of limitations generally for debt is 6 years, but I've just got in the back of my mind that once you have a judgment, that period of time is extended from the date of the judgment, and that, of course, is the date of the order that you've got. So let me check on that, and I'll certainly comment on it next week for you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Margarita. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB has just passed 8 minutes past nine. That's past 10 on the Tweed. The Law and You is the program. Our telephone number is 55-208-88. That number, 55-208-88. And thank you to all the people who called in last week. We certainly had an interesting program, some interesting issues raised. And the one that's caught my eye for this week is probably that the wheels of justice turn slowly, but turn they do. And I think a few examples of that, of course, is the announcement that the Australian government, in conjunction with the Netherlands, are launching civil proceedings against Russia in relation to the downing of MH17. Which, of course, was 8 years ago. It's hard to believe that that was, in fact, 8 years ago. But it's also been highlighted to me in some case results that I've been reading recently, or outcomes. And these are in particular actions that have been taken either by the ACCC, which is the Consumer Watchdog, or alternatively ASIC. And the first one was a decision that was just reported on about a month ago from memory, a company, Aware Financial Services Australia, which was previously State Super Financial Services Australia, or State Plus. And they have recently been hit with a fine for charging customers fees for financial services that weren't provided. And the federal court has ordered them to pay a penalty of $20 million. Now, that's the result of charging approximately 25,000 customers a total of $50 million in fees for advice. And this was including part of a superannuation product offered between August 2014 and June 2018. And that sort of turned my mind back to a case that I spoke about quite some time ago, and which the Australian Competition Watchdog, or the ACCC, has recently appealed, and that is a $1 million penalty that was handed down by the federal court against a company called EmployShore. And the reason for the appeal is that the ACCC believe the fine is manifestly inadequate after the court found that the human resources company basically was making misleading representations in Google ads. So originally the ACCC was seeking a penalty of $5 million. So it will just be interesting to see how that all unwinds, and we'll keep an eye on that. But enough of that. We have a couple of callers online, as we say good morning to Erica. G'day, Erica. How are you today?
Yes, good morning. With the lack of rental on the Gold Coast, I'm thinking of making a bedroom available to a middle-aged couple for a few months till a few weeks till they find accommodation for free.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering what sort of warnings or considerations can you tell me to think about?
Right, okay. Well, what I would do if I was you, Erica, is I would give the RTA, the Residential Tenancy Authority, a call in relation to this. If you're making the room available, the issue is whether they come under, even though it's free, whether they come under the tenancy law or not, whether they may be regarded simply as what would commonly be referred to as a boarder or a lodger, although they are not paying anything for it. So I think if I was you, I would be inclined to give the RTA a call just to check on the situation, because the obvious thing that you want to be aware of is, look, I'm sure it'll all go swimmingly well and, you know, you'll end up with a nice couple there who will be in your home. But the difficulty may arise if down the track you need them to leave and they refuse to leave. And of course, that would be a real problem for you. So I would be inclined to give the RTA a call just to double check on what sort of notice you may be required to give. And also whether you need to check references for someone coming in on that basis. I know that you're doing this out of the goodness of your heart, and I mean, we've seen the pictures on the TV, haven't we, from refugees arriving from Ukraine into adjoining countries, where there are people at the train station holding up signs saying, accommodation for mother and child, or accommodation for elderly couple, or whatever. And everyone's doing it out of the goodness of their heart, and it's only right that we should try and do this during these very difficult times, particularly in response to the floods. But I would just sound a note of caution and suggest that you just check in relation to what issues may arise, so that you know what they are, and then you can make your decision objectively.
Thank you.
Do you want the number for the Residential Tenancies Authority, Erica?
I will look it up later.
Okay, all right. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB continues to roll along, 14 minutes past 9 past 10 on the Tweed, as we say good morning to Alex. Good morning, Alex. How are you today?
Oh, hello.
Yes, Alex, how are you?
Oh, good, thank you. I just had a question about renting as well. I'm renting, and there was some damage to my roof in the recent storms, and it's sort of caved in the garage area, and there's a crack in my bedroom roof, and I'm just worried about asbestos because it's an older building. And I talked to my real estate, but they're not willing to fix it because it's an older building. I was just wondering what I should do there, yeah.
Right. Well, look, I think really, Alex, what you need to do is probably issue a notice to the landlord requiring them to repair. It would be are you under a tenancy agreement?
Yes, but I'm not on a lease. I'm just periodic, so I can waive quickly if I need to. Yeah.
Right. Well, I suppose the downside of that, of course, is that the landlord can give you notice to leave as well. So that you need to bear that in mind. But you certainly can issue what's called a notice to remedy breach. And again, this comes under the residential tenancy legislation. If you took, do you have access to a computer, to the internet?
I do, yes.
Okay. So if you just Google, this is in Queensland, is it?
Yes, that's right.
So if you Google Residential Tenancy Authority, if you just, they have some very, very useful material on their website, information sheets for tenants who are having difficulty with their landlord, and they also have the appropriate forms that you can serve on the landlord in relation to these sorts of things. So I would suggest that you take a look at their website. In relation to the asbestos, your concern about asbestos, I suppose in some respects that's a bit of a two-edged sword, isn't it? Because if it does turn out to be asbestos, you very well may be required to leave the property, and you very well may wish to anyway for obvious safety reasons.
But I'm just going to point out, like what the last woman said about there's not many rentals available at the moment, so
exactly.
And it's hard to find somewhere on a short notice. So
yes.
I don't want to be forced to leave if I don't have to.
So it's going to be one of those things. Has the caving in of the roof in the garage made the garage unusable?
No, I can still drive my car in and out, but it's sort of like. There's a damage to the roof where there could potentially be asbestos coming in. I don't know if there is, but I thought I should maybe notify the council or something, but I'm not sure. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I think the difficulty would... Do you have a friend who's a builder or something of that nature?
No, but I rang a number about getting it privately tested, and I think they quoted me $250 to get it tested for asbestos,
Yeah, so, I mean, that may be an option for you just to set your mind at rest, because it may or may not be asbestos. That would be, certainly if you found out that it's not asbestos, well, that would be, that would at least set your mind at rest. But it is a very difficult situation, particularly having regard to the current rental market. Alex, I certainly do sympathise with you.
Okay, then. Well, thank you for your help, John.
Okay, then. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB just coming up, or just gone 18 minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. And we say good morning to Val. G'day, Val. How are you today? Hello, Val. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
No, that's quite okay. How are you today, Val?
Well, thank you. Look, apart from that, the caller two calls part, Erica, I think it
yes,
was.
Yes, yes.
I've just been through that.
Right.
And when you do that, you come under a, in New South Wales, you become under a verbal tenancy agreement.
Mm.
Whether you sign anything or not, you can't, you have lots and lots of difficulty getting them out.
Mm.
You have to go through ACAT, which then, you go up to, court and all this sort of stuff, and you have meetings and stuff. So I just thought I'd put that in first because I've just done that.
Yes.
I don't know about Queensland, but in New South Wales, I've just gone through that maintenance harrowing, so I wouldn't advise it if I was her because it could fall foul. Okay, now for my problem. I was wondering, with your superannuation, when you're doing a will and everything, should it be in your will as an estate? Or which is the best way to go? Or do you give it to the children individually?
Well, firstly, you can't leave your superannuation under your will.
Okay.
So the only way you can deal with your superannuation is by making superannuation nomination. So a death nomination. So you either get a binding death benefit nomination, the preferable one, binding death benefit nomination, or a non-lapsing binding death benefit nomination, which is the best because it doesn't lapse. If you just do a binding death benefit nomination with a retail or an industry fund, then in 99% of cases, you've got to renew it every 3 years. Okay. Whereas if you are able to do a non-lapsing binding death benefit nomination, then as the name suggests, they don't lapse. So the question then is, which is the best way to leave your super? So certainly if the super is left to your spouse, or to
my spouse has passed.
Right, okay. Or you leave it to your dependent children, then it will be tax-free. However, if your
children are not dependent.
Your children are no longer dependent on you, then if you leave it to them, there will be a portion of it, of the superannuation that will be taken in tax. And I think from memory it works out around about 17.5%. Now, it's a question of how much you have in super, Val, as to whether it's best for it to go directly to your children or to go into your will. If the amount is only modest, and you're reasonably comfortable with your children receiving that amount, then you can certainly nominate them in a binding death benefit nomination or a non-lapsing binding death benefit nomination in the proportions that you wish to leave. So, for example, if you had two children, it could be 50-50, it could be 70-30, whatever you want to do. And they will receive that money personally, which means that that if they're in a difficult relationship, those funds could be susceptible to attack by their partner. If they're in a difficult business situation where a business has failed, those funds could be seized to pay their debts. If they're entering into bankruptcy, they could be taken by the official trustee in bankruptcy. So there's a lot of disadvantages there. However, if you leave the money, the superannuation, to your legal personal representative, and this is normally laid down under your will, under the superannuation, the terms of the superannuation deed. In most cases, it's your legal personal representative, which is the same as the executor. That's another name for the executor of your will. But it will also apply to the administrator of your estate if you didn't have a will. And
But what happens if it's the same person?
You mean the executor and your child are the same, right? Well, they're still receiving it in a different category or in a different persona. So one is personally, and the other is in their capacity as the executor of your will. Now, if the amount of your superannuation is substantial, and it is such that it may be worthwhile you considering, when taken with the rest of your assets in your estate, it may be worth your while to set up what's called a testamentary discretionary trust for your children, then it very well may be worthwhile to leave it to your estate, because then the super can go into the one or more testamentary trusts you set up for your children. And in that way, if that testamentary trust is structured correctly, the funds can be quarantined from attack under the family in a property settlement under the Family Law Act. Can also be quarantined from a claim by creditors and indeed from the trustee in bankruptcy. So, but it does depend on how much money is going in as to whether it is legally and financially viable to set up a testamentary trust. So it's not just an automatic thing.
What would you say is a minor amount, just to give me a bit of an idea? So.
Yes, look, I would think I would probably not be recommending a client set up a testamentary discretionary trust with less than $150,000 in it.
Yeah, that's okay, So there's naturally, where do you get that done?
Like, well, you'd get it done with your solicitor. Yeah, so you'd need to go to a lawyer who practices in the area of asset protection estate planning. And who can basically map out an estate plan for you, which would include a will incorporating testamentary discretionary trusts and a statutory declaration in the form of a statement of wishes as to how you want that trust to be administered. And, of course, the third aspect to all of this is always to ensure that you have an appropriate enduring power of attorney in place.
Yeah, and if And naturally, there's sort of fees and charges and everything with all that too. So evidently, are they that expensive or not do that?
Certainly setting up a will incorporating a testamentary discretionary trust is far more expensive than doing just a standard will. So, but I basically suggest to clients that it's like a one-off insurance premium. So, you know, we pay the insurance premium on our house every year, and in many cases it's, you know, $1,000 or $2,000, and we pay that in the hope that our home will never burn down. But we pay that every year with a will incorporating a testamentary trust. I equate the fee to basically a one-off premium. So you pay you pay the fees once, but unless there's a catastrophic change in your circumstances, you won't need to redo your will again. So that will can stand you in good stead for many, many years to come. Now, there is absolutely nothing that happens in relation to that testamentary trust until you pass away. It just simply lies dormant in your will, exactly the same as a will. A will has no effect until you pass away, but at that point it is enlivened, and then there will be certain costs involved in maintaining that trust. For example, the trust will need to lodge a tax return each year. So there will be those sorts of costs that are involved. All right, then.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Val. And the time on 4CRB, 27 minutes past 9 past 10 on the Tweed, and probably our last caller for this morning, Nancy. Good morning, Nancy. How are you today?
Oh, hello, John. Yes, that all sounded terribly complicated.
Sorry about that.
No, I've been listening to that, and I was wondering, does anything like that apply to shares that you have?
So, in other words, with shares, they're basically personalty. So you have two options with shares. You can leave them directly. Shares will always come under your will if they're in your name because they're a personal asset. So therefore, you can leave the shares to named individuals personally, or you can leave shares into a testamentary trust for the benefit of your children, one or more of your children. So those options are available with shares as well.
So you're saying that becomes part of your estate, and they can just be equally divided between your children in your will?
Well, shares are part of your estate. Unlike superannuation, which does not come into your estate, it is outside of, under the super legislation. The only way that you can deal with superannuation is by way of a death benefit nomination. And so it's probably the best example I can give of similarity is a property you own as joint tenants. If you own a property as joint tenants with someone, it does not go into your estate. It automatically devolves upon the surviving joint owner, regardless of what your will says. And so superannuation's a little bit like that. It will go to whomever you have in your binding death benefit nomination, or if you don't have anyone in it and it's an industry, any fund actually, it will go where the trustees decide it will go in exercise of their discretion, but always it can only go to eligible beneficiaries under the super legislation. However, with shares are like a motor car or like a block of land under your will. They will just be left. You can leave them however you please. So you can either leave them personally to a beneficiary or you can leave them in a testamentary trust for a beneficiary.
Okay, sounds good. I spent all my super as quickly as I could.
Well, what do they say? What do they call it? The ski club, spend the kids' inheritance.
Yes, exactly.
Some of them call it the skin club, spend the kids' inheritance now.
Well, shares have been good to me.
Well,
thank you so much, John.
All the very best. And that's probably about all the time we have for the program today. Thank you to all the people who called in and made for such an interesting program. I did have a few other issues that I wanted to talk about, but they, of course, can wait for another day. I'll leave you with one thing that I've certainly been very pleased to see, and that is that many of the big law firms that previously had offices in Russia, have announced that they're closing down their Russian offices as part of the sanctions against Russia in relation to Ukraine, which is certainly very pleasing to see. So let's just hope and pray for a quick resolution of that dispute to save so many lives, as we, of course, continue to pray for all of our near neighbours who've been so badly affected by the floods in southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning for this program of The Law and You. I look forward to being back with you next week. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.
You've been listening to The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group, the Gold Coast's longest established law firm, helping Gold Coasters since 1955. Call them today on 55973 66.